you know, we had to make decisions every day about whether to prioritize our training for the Olympics or prioritize our, you know, our public health and safety.
Welcome to the Shakeout Podcast. I'm your host, Kate Van Buskirk. 2 weeks ago, the Canadian Olympic Committee announced that they would not send any competitors to a summer 2020 Olympic Games. In doing so, they took a stand for their athletes and became a global leader in the push for postponement. Today, we hear from two Canadian runners who had already qualified for the Games. Like thousands of others across the globe, they're grappling with the ever-changing reality of COVID-19, and now, the unprecedented delay of the biggest athletic event in the world. Gabriella Debuse Stafford is one of Canada's most accomplished mid-distance runners. The 2016 Olympian and four-time national champion has claimed over a dozen Canadian records. 2 years ago, she moved to Glasgow, Scotland with her husband Rowan to train with some of the world's best athletes. She opened her 2020 racing season with an indoor 800-meter personal best in February, and looked poised to have another record-breaking year. But the world has changed drastically since then. In March, the coronavirus forced the postponement of the World Athletics Indoor Championships. Spring road races quickly followed. But even as international travel was being strongly discouraged, the IOC continued to defend their stance that the Olympic Games would not be postponed. Then, on March 22nd, the COC released a statement decrying the IOC's foot-dragging and announcing that Canada would not participate in this summer's Games. Less than 48 hours later, we had confirmation that the Tokyo Olympics would be pushed to 2021. Gabriella and her husband had to make fast decisions. Borders were closing, and the fear that they wouldn't be able to return home to Canada became very real. They packed up their belongings and arrived in Toronto the day after the IOC announcement. I connected with Gabriella last Monday, halfway through her 2-week quarantine.
At the current moment, the guideline is that you have to, you know, stay in your house. And so my family, we're a family of seven. So we wouldn't really be in quarantine if we went home to my parents' house. So we actually, like, the night before we were supposed to arrive, we called my aunts and asked them if we could stay in their self-contained basement apartment, which they had been using for storage. Nobody was in there at the moment. So like within, you know, less than 24 hours, they like cleaned out their basement and made it ready for us to stay there for 2 weeks. So it's quite funny because we've had friends, you know, drop off things for us. It's been really sweet. We've had like so much support. Like I said, like my aunt clearing out their basement within 24 hours. And then friends of ours who have dropped off groceries and, you know, wine and nice meats from the butchers and things like that. So it was pretty surreal, like seeing my family the first day that we arrived and, you know, being 2 meters away from all of them and just like standing there and smiling like idiots. You know, it's just very surreal because, you know, 24 hours previously, we did not think we were going to be in Canada, and we're doing well, all things considered. I think the initial shock has worn off. I've never really like gone through like culture shock or anything from traveling before, but this was definitely a situation where I had, both of us had a little bit of that, and just little things like, yeah, like not being able to hug your family when you haven't seen them in months. It's strange. The closest contact I had was my dad reached out to give me my ukulele and I reached out to grab the other end of it. And he was just like, you could see my dad was just like, I just want to hug you. And I was like, no, don't touch me. I dodged his hug.
So I'm so curious, what was the situation like? It sounds like this was kind of a last minute decision. I know that everything has just been changing so quickly and you were in the UK with Rowan and you've been home a week now, but can you walk us through what the last couple of weeks have been like for you guys?
Yes. So the last couple of weeks have been, it was kind of like fine. And then just things just really ramped things up. So, you know, the anxiety that we potentially would end up on the other side of a border from my family had been growing for several weeks. My brother was supposed to visit me in Glasgow. And then at the last minute, my dad canceled his trip because of the coronavirus situation, and Italy had gone into lockdown. And my dad was worried that my brother might not be able to get back into the country if he left. So, you know, kind of when that happened, I was starting to get a little bit anxious about like, oh, what if borders close and stuff? Like, when will we be able to get back to Canada? When will we see our family again? There's just a lot of uncertainty. So that was kind of in the back of my mind, but we had plans to stay in Glasgow because, you know, the Olympics were still on and Rowan had his school and his law exams and a job lined up for the summer. You know, I was going to go on an altitude training camp in the Pyrenees in France. And then we pulled out of that. Well, it wasn't really our decision in the end because we were going to fly into Barcelona and then drive from Barcelona into the Pyrenees. And the day before, flights to Spain started getting canceled. And then the next day, Spain went into lockdown. And same with France. So things were starting to get more serious. And, you know, talk of the Olympics being postponed started to get more serious as well. And yeah, probably, I guess, a week or maybe just 2 weeks actually after France and Spain went into lockdown, you know, I was thinking it was crazy. Like, the idea of like having an Olympics in the situation was just nuts. Last Monday, I wake up and overnight, because, you know, the time change, Canada had announced that we had pulled out of the Olympics. Then it was announced that the UK was going into a full-on lockdown. So things in the UK really accelerated quickly as well. And groups of more than two people outside were banned. So it became, you know, clear that I wasn't going to be able to train with my training group in Glasgow. And so I was going to have to train alone. You know, Canada was, you know, even if there was an Olympics in 2020, you know, I wouldn't be going. We had not very many reasons to stay in Glasgow at that point, you know. And then Rowan's school had been moved online and his exams had been moved online and his job was, you know, canceled for the summer. So there was just no reason for us to stay in Glasgow. And as well, from like a kind of social isolation standpoint, like, we hadn't been in Glasgow very long and the friends that we had made were not properly in the city or not near our neighborhood. So we didn't really have like a strong community that could support us and that we could support if like we got into trouble, like if one of us got sick or something, we would be relying a lot on like a few people who didn't really live close to us, right? So that sense of kind of social isolation was something to consider as well. But we didn't really think a lot about, you know, pros and cons. It was a very kind of visceral decision of when the news came out that the UK was going to lockdown. We were just like, you know, we have to go home. Like, it was just the right thing to do.
So you woke up to this news on Monday. You kind of explained what that day looked like. And then did you fly home the next day?
Yeah. So just because with every day that would go by, the chances that we can get back into Canada just like would diminish, right? So, you know, at first I was like, oh, I don't want to be rash. Maybe we shouldn't leave tomorrow. Maybe we should leave the next day. But Rowan like found flights. We had to book two separate tickets, one from Glasgow to Gatwick and then Gatwick to Toronto. And it was one of those transatlantic flights that I guess like the government is sponsoring them that are they're specifically continuing to travel to bring home Canadians. So, you know, it was a long haul flight with about 60 people who boarded it, which was pretty crazy. So that night, it was like 10 p.m. I texted my coach. I was like, I don't want to be rash, but I think I should go home. And he's like, yeah, I think that's a good idea. And then we booked the flights and we spent all night packing and we left our apartment at 3 a.m. And we, you know, reduced our belongings to three checked bags and a couple carry-ons and got a taxi at 3 a.m. to make a 6 a.m. flight. So,
oh my gosh, what a story. That's just incredible. And it's funny because you hear these stories in the news, but you're the first person I've talked to anyway who's gone through this firsthand. And it's just, it's otherworldly to hear.
It is. The shock kind of took a while to settle. Even just thinking about it now, I'm like getting emotional. I'm just like looking at our bags in our living room and just and seeing, because we don't know when we're going to be back. You know, like we have no idea when air travel is going to be resuming, and just looking at our apartment and like our home and just like reducing that to, you know, a couple of bags. And it's a lot to take in, but you know, there's definitely people in worse situations than us, but shock is shock as well. So
for sure. I would imagine there might be a little silver lining there that you were at least with your partner. I would imagine doing that solo would have been potentially just that much more difficult. But I'm so glad you're both back and you're both safe. And it sounds like you're healthy for now, which is great.
Yeah. It was definitely, I am very grateful that I've been able to have Rowan throughout this with me. You know, when we were going through the airports, most people were traveling alone. And it was very eerie being in these airports with like the lights half on and all the shops closed, you know, an international airport only like two flights leaving in the next, you know, for the day or something. Like it was just pretty crazy where it's like usually hundreds of flights would leave this airport a day. To have somebody to kind of like be there to do that with was made things a lot easier.
Right. So you make these quick decisions. Everything is changing so rapidly. I know that you were probably, you know, pretty focused primarily on just getting, like, it sounds like the logistics just required all of your focus and attention for a couple of days, just getting the flights booked, getting packed, making the decision, getting home. But in the midst of all that, I assume, of course, you were staying updated and following the news and the really quick changes that were happening, first with Team Canada, the COC, making their announcement that they would not be sending Canadian athletes to a 2020 Summer Olympics. And then, of course, the official announcement that there was going to be a postponement and then the eventual release of the new dates. Can you walk us through what some of the emotions and thoughts were as you watched all of this transpire as someone who's already qualified for the Tokyo Olympics?
So I think the most visceral kind of reactions that I had in terms of like how the virus has impacted, you know, my sporting career was when Team Canada pulled out of the games and then the IOC decided to postpone them. I, you know, was absolutely in support of Team Canada's decision. I think it was really good of them to put pressure on the IOC this early because, you know, the IOC was not giving us a lot of hope that they were really taking this kind of situation seriously. You know, months ago they had said, you know, if the virus is contained by May, we'll go ahead. But, you know, we have kind of until May to like get this thing under control for it to be safe. And then when things really started escalating in Europe, they kind of kicked out the can down the road or whatever the expression is and said, beyond May, we'll see how it's going beyond May. And it's just, they weren't giving us any kind of reason to trust them that they were going to take this seriously. They were just kind of acting like it was going to go away. And the fact of the matter is it doesn't matter if by May or June, this virus is contained. Countries were going into full-on lockdown, like athletes could not train. And athletes who could train, but were kind of in a semi-state of lockdown, like in Canada, you know, we had to make decisions every day about whether to prioritize our training for the Olympics or prioritize our, you know, our public health and safety. And runners, we can kind of train pretty well in this situation. But if you think about people who are in team sports, you know, swimmers, like they can't, you know, they can't train properly for an Olympics right now. So athletes needed an answer to what was happening regarding the Olympics now. We couldn't even wait, you know, and then the IOC shifted their deadline to, okay, well, we're going to make a decision in mid-April. But we couldn't wait until mid-April because that period of time where athletes couldn't train properly, it just was huge for people's anxiety, I think. We had all the information we needed now to make a decision regarding the Olympics. And so I think if Canada hadn't made that move, I don't think the IOC would have postponed the Olympics, you know, literally 2 days later. They would have just waited till April and maybe postponed it then or not. But it's upsetting, obviously, to have the Olympics be postponed. But I think everybody's primary concern is the implications of this virus on everybody's health. And, you know, the Olympics are kind of, it's upsetting to have your career be called into question, of course, but that's our primary concern.
Trevor Hofbauer won the Canadian Olympic Marathon Trials in October in a gigantic personal best of 2:09.51, well under the Olympic qualifying standard. His victory sealed his spot on the Canadian team, and he was set to compete at his first Olympic Games this summer. Fortunately, his qualification will be honored despite the one-year postponement. I connected with Trevor in his home of Calgary. He started with an optimistic take on the whole situation, especially for his fellow Canadian marathoners. But that doesn't mean he's not concerned.
I think that when you're building up over a four-year time period, like over that span of 4 years, you get like really burnt out or you get injured and there's like no margin for error. So this like time period that we have away from competition and the postponement of the Olympics allows people to address potentially serious issues that they're dealing with or like trying to fight through to just get to the Olympics rather than taking the foot off the gas and addressing it if the Olympics were to take place. But then also on the men's marathoning side, I think the extra year for Evan Esselink is really good for him and gives more time to Tristan. And on the men's side, marathoning is kind of swinging to the younger side. So for younger athletes, it's great.
But let's talk about you, because obviously you did have this unbelievable year. I mean, this fall was just, you know, such a huge breakthrough for you. And you got your qualifying mark, and it must be relieving to hear that Athletics Canada and the IOC and World Athletics are going to honor that qualification. How are you feeling about the postponement?
Yeah, I'm happy about the postponement because I thought it was pretty irresponsible for individuals out there saying that the Olympics were still going to go on, given the current situation. So I'm happy that it was postponed for the greater good of our society. But at the same time, from an athletic perspective, it does suck because it is something that you've prepared for over the span of years. And to have it marked on the calendar as this is the day that you've been preparing for and to see that day get pushed back a year, I guess you just really have to take your foot off the gas and take a look at the big picture and appreciate what you have rather than being bitter about the whole situation. It's also more than just a race. Like going to the Olympics could be, and it is like a career and a profession. So it does have greater implications than just running a race. And that I think is more challenging than just pushing back a single race for a year.
Can you talk more about what some of those implications look like for you personally?
Yeah, I'll be pretty transparent with postponement and cancellations of races. There goes any sort of appearance fees or race winnings, and I rely on that a lot to cover my bills. With postponement and cancellation of races, sponsorship opportunities have kind of fallen through as well. Everybody's on pause and everybody's trying to hold on to what they have, and the economy's taking a little bit of a hit right now. So leading into the Olympics as a non-funded athlete, I would get an Olympic card. And that's just not happening anymore because the Olympics are now taking place next year and that Olympic card will take effect next year. But essentially with the situation and everything that's going on, it's taken all of my income and thrown it into a garbage can, and it's basically at nothing right now. So it's kind of tough to figure things out because it's not like I can just go out and get a job. Everywhere is closed. Nobody's hiring. And it's a really, really weird spot to be in right now.
Yeah, that is such a frustrating situation for so many people. And I think that many of our listeners may not fully understand what the financial implications are for someone like yourself. So in general, the public and the running community is going to see this man who ran the second fastest Canadian marathon time in history, who had his spot on the Olympic team solidified a few months ago. And of course, there's this misnomer that Olympians or professional runners make a ton of money, which is obviously not true. Everything you've just said indicates that. So just so our listeners understand, the way that the carding system works in Canada, you were uncarded at the beginning of the last carding cycle, which occurred, I believe, just a couple weeks before you ran the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon. So you missed the window to successfully get a card for this current year, which means you're now going to have to wait another full year to get any government funding. And I believe you're also unsponsored. Is all of that correct?
That is. Yeah. It's unfortunate that it works out that way, but I guess there is rhyme and reason to it all. Or a little bit falls onto me because I wasn't really seeking sponsorship from anybody going into this year because I had just come off my contract with New Balance and I was content not having that pressure of being sponsored. But then the races started to fall through and I was in conversation with a brand and that fell through too. So a little bit does fall on me because I didn't take enough action, but I also don't want to be sponsored by somebody just to be sponsored by somebody. I want to be connected to a brand that fits well with my morals and my values. And I was really seeking the right fit and I found that fit and it just hasn't happened right now because of this situation.
This concept of financial insecurity weighs heavily on many Olympic athletes around the world. And as Gabriella points out, there are other reasons to be concerned about inequality right now.
I was also, you know, relieved because I didn't want to participate in an Olympics in 2020 in the midst of this pandemic, you know, because it was no longer going to be an even playing field from a, you know, public health standpoint where athletes can no longer train properly for a couple of months leading up to the Olympics. So you're going to be favoring athletes who do have access to facilities, whose countries haven't been hit by the pandemic as hard. And then also from like an anti-doping standpoint, right? Like many at-home testing programs have been suspended in countries like China, the US, you know, Canada now. And I'm sure like countries in Europe, although I'm not sure of exactly which countries. So, you know, from a public health standpoint, that makes sense. But do we really want an Olympics where we have cheats that can dope without any fear of being tested at home for months and without like a regular season competition schedule in the months leading up to the games where we can draw these people out and potentially catch them at competitions, right? So it was just like, it didn't make sense to have an Olympics in this whole situation.
So I'm sure that this is a really difficult question to answer right now, but do you have a sense of what this might mean in terms of how you'll approach the next 15 months? Because now all of a sudden, not only do we not have an Olympics starting on July 24th of this year, but of course, several Diamond Leagues have been either canceled or postponed. You know, as far as we can tell, the summer racing season is in jeopardy in its entirety. And we're hopeful that we can still get some racing in. But do you have any general sense of what this might mean for your racing and training over the next few months and the next year?
Yeah, it is very difficult to answer that question right now. Yeah, I'm just trying to take it day by day in terms of finding a new normal in my training. We will have access to races in terms of big international races once we can get, you know, once kind of normal air traffic can resume. So whenever that is, who knows? At this point, you know, there's still a shot that maybe you could have some races in maybe July, August, September, but I don't know. I think it's unlikely, but we have to be prepared to have, you know, to be racing then because we could, and that would be great. But yeah, it's like I have no idea when I can get back to Europe, get back to our home, let alone to do races. So the primary goal is just to kind of find a new normal in my training. And, you know, I'll be living with my sister. So hopefully we can get some, put some good work together.
The Stafford sisters back at it in Toronto. I love it.
I know, just like old times.
We haven't really had that conversation yet because it's just so fresh. For this spring, I'm hoping that the Canadian Half Champs is still going to go on in June, but that's looking unlikely right now. If that's the case and it does get postponed, then I'll do a time trial in Calgary for a 10,000 meter, or if travel restrictions kind of ease up and social distancing eases up, then I might fly or drive down to Vancouver. But I think that's too early to call. I think that the safe bet is just doing a little time trial in Calgary and seeing how fit I get over here in the next little bit. And then in the fall, I'll definitely do a marathon. And now that the Olympics are pushed back, so I don't know what race I'm going to do yet. And I hope that races do come back in the fall and they're not postponed or canceled as well. But if that does fall through, then I'll set up a kind of a 10-kilometer loop in the city here and do a marathon in Calgary. That would just be with friends who are like on a bike and providing me bottles, or just kind of like set up my own little mini marathon that would be for myself to just get the feeling of that 42 kilometers back into the legs.
So I noticed that a few veteran marathoners on social media have sort of been encouraging marathoners who have had their spring racing plans pushed. And I think they were even, you know, suggesting this of perhaps some of the American marathoners who just came off the Olympic trials were saying, look, you've got the time now. Why not, especially if you've already qualified, if you already have that qualifying mark solidified, why not try your hand or your legs at a shorter distance? Like, why not really devote part of this season towards a 10,000? And let's say there are some track races later in the summer in August or September, why not, you know, drop down in distance and test out the speed a little bit? Does that have appeal to you? I know you said you're going to map out a 10K loop in your neighborhood, but does racing any of the shorter events, do you think you'll have plans to explore some of that?
So this spring I was preparing for a half marathon. And because that's not going to take place, then I don't want to really just run a half marathon on the pathway for the sake of it in Calgary. So I'll just try something new and put on some spikes and do a 10,000 meter on the track just for fun. I think it would be nice to run a decently quick time, but Calgary, you can't do that as well as other places. Yeah, I think there is some value into stepping down to those shorter distances and testing out the wheels, but at the same time, because right now is like so unknown and there's nothing really set in stone, I think that if you like running longer distances, continue running longer distances, like do what you like and do what you enjoy. And I think that's going to be the biggest attribute to a success once races do come back around.
We're we're less than 4 months out from when you would have run your Olympic marathon. If the Olympics were to have gone forward at the original date, what would your training have looked like over the next couple of months? And where are you right now in that build?
Yeah, so right now I'm just getting back into it. Last week was actually week number one of the marathon training program that I had set out with my coach, and we were ready to go. I was pretty motivated and engaged to start it off right, and then all this news kind of came down. So I've taken my foot off the gas a little bit. I also sprained my ankle pretty good on Sunday. So I'm just taking this week to ride the bike, and then I'll give it a shot next week and see how it handles some impact. But for the most part, I'm pretty stationary right now and just trying to deal with this ankle and make sure that it's strengthened back up to 100% and making sure that everything biomechanically is going well, and just don't want to rush it, because if I don't let this heal or if I'm not paying attention to the fine details, I could get hurt down the road and that would jeopardize everything.
Well, that's very smart. And of course, one of the big implications for athletes right now is that we don't have access to the integrated support team that we've had in the past. So things like physio, massage, chiropractic, all the things that keep us healthy. And especially if you're dealing with a little bit of an injury, I can imagine that would be even, you know, of greater concern if you don't have the support that you need medically to deal with that. Is that true?
Yeah, I do a good job taking a look at what my physiotherapist and my massage therapist, what they do and what activities and strengthening exercises they provide me to do. So I do have a good idea of what to do when injuries occur and how to strengthen them to get better on the back end of it. But I really feel for the track and field athletes, and especially the field athletes, and then also the other sports like team sports, court sports, anything in the water. Like those athletes really can't train. Being a marathoner is a little easier because you have the outdoors and you just run a lot of miles and then you do some yoga and some light weights and it's pretty simple. But for a lot of other athletes, like you do have to be in the gym and you do have to be doing very specific activities with your equipment, and not having facilities and an IST team can be pretty challenging.
Well, we know that, of course, social media has been inundated with some actually really humorous like content from athletes showing all the things that they're doing, all the things that they can do creatively in this time of uncertainty. You talked about how you obviously can't work right now. I know that you are doing some training, but you're taking a little step back. What other things are you doing to sort of help kill the time right now while you're social distancing and not in full training and not working?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of time in the day. Found that out pretty quickly here. My partner and I, we are social distancing, and I've barely seen a single soul for the last 16, 17, I don't even know how many days it's been. We've been playing so many board games. I'm getting my butt kicked at Catan. So it is kind of fun playing one versus one Catan, and we do have Skippo and Exploding Kitten, Sequence, Dutch Blitz, Tenzies, Bananagrams. We have some pretty good games that we've been playing and killing our time with. Netflix is pretty popular in the house right now. We do get out for runs in the morning, and then in the evening we'll go for a walk. So we are spending some time outside, but it is definitely not very busy right now, and just watching the clock tick away.
Yeah, Rowan and I joke that this quarantine is like the honeymoon that we never actually properly got. So it's not a great honeymoon, but we're making the most of it.
In your aunt's basement.
Yeah, exactly. In terms of things that we're doing to keep us sane, we've been playing a lot of video games. I got a Nintendo Switch before we left the UK. And have you watched The Witcher on Netflix? I would recommend it, but I like fantasy and that type of genre. So if that's your thing, then I feel like you'd enjoy it. But yeah, so the Netflix series is based on like a series of books and video games. So that's been fun. We don't really have any board games, so we've just been like chilling mostly and reading. Like I said, my dad dropped off my ukulele, which I have been reunited with after like a year or so. So I'm picking that up again. We've been watching like some Formula One racing. Rowan's introduced me to that. It's the like Drive to Survive or something. Would recommend. It's like the best reality TV, I think, because it's reality TV, but in the context of races. So it's quite fun.
So, of course, we're talking to a bunch of runners on this podcast, many of whom have had their spring racing seasons cut short or, you know, sort of obliterated altogether. And as spring comes and as the weather warms, everyone's getting outside for runs, just partly so they can have something to do. But I think morale is a little low with, you know, so much uncertainty about where goals are going to be and when you're going to be able to race or even just run with friends again. Do you have any sort of general words of advice or motivation for our running community, understanding that you yourself are still trying to find that as well?
I think a big thing is right now you need to take care of your mental and emotional health first. So, you know, like don't beat yourself up if your splits aren't what you want them to be or you're not being productive like at your work or whatever, like finding focus might be difficult to do. And, you know, we're all under a lot of stress. So it's just really important to be kind to ourselves and to continue like reaching out to our friends and family for that support and offering that support as well to others. Yeah. And I think, you know, because there's no like close races, you just got to do what works for you. If you're the type of person that gets recharged by going out and hammering, you know, a good session on the roads on your own, then that's great. Go for it. But if you're the type of person that, you know, really needs to recharge by just taking like a week or two easy and just going on easy runs just for your mental and emotional well-being, then do that. You know, like I feel like right now we really have to take care of ourselves and we shouldn't have to feel like running is becoming a burden or is stressing us out. Like it should be a place where we find some emotional release and it should be a place to recharge. You know, there's a lot of stressful things going on, so we don't want running to be adding to that stress.
Yeah, I really feel for a lot of people right now because race season and just the race calendar was starting to get underway in March, and that's when events were starting to get postponed. So people who were training for specific events in March and April, they were probably like towards the end of their training cycle and halfway through their training cycle. And to get to that point, like it sucks when you put in that much training and you just can't use it towards a race or like an official result. But at the same time, I think that if you are in that boat and you don't have a race to prepare for, just make sure that you're taking a look at the big picture and taking a look and being positive about the future. The training that individuals have done leading up to this point right now, and even going forward through the future, it's all going to contribute and help benefit you as an athlete. It's going to make you stronger. It's going to help with your progression as well. So even though there's nothing on the calendar right now, just make sure that you're taking the time to stretch and to do some strength exercises and even try and put in like a short training block to improve that fitness, because you can use that fitness that you're gaining right now towards events in the future. So nothing's to waste right now. It's all towards the benefit of the future.
Thank you to Gabriella and Trevor for sharing their experiences and advice with us today. Keep checking back to runningmagazine.ca for updates on all of our Olympic hopefuls. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Shakeout Podcast. And join our Facebook discussion group to stay engaged with myself and Maddie Kelly, the co-host of The Rundown. We'll bring you another episode on Friday. Until then, stay healthy and safe. Chat soon.